Imagine for a second, right, that I walk right up to you, look you dead in the eye, and hand you a crisp, brand new $10 bill.
Okay.
You're holding it in your hand. You can, feel the paper, see the watermark. You know exactly what it's worth. And then I ask you this seemingly ridiculous question,
What
which
is?
I asked, how much will you sell this exact bill back to me for?
I mean, it sounds like a trick, right? Or like a some kind of psychological trap where the obvious answer has to be the wrong one.
Precisely. It feels like a riddle. But this specific, seemingly absurd scenario is actually the foundation of this massive, incredibly revealing economic study.
Yeah, it really is.
So today we are taking a deep dive into a really fascinating 2026 research paper. It's by behavioral economists Andreas Tostadas, Marco Palma, and Paul Feldman.
Right.
And the title is Incentives and Payment Mechanisms in Preference Elicitation, which sounds super
I'm
fancy.
very academic, yeah.
Yeah, but our mission for this deep dive is actually pretty simple. We want to explore this fundamental mystery of behavioral science. Like, how do economists actually get human beings to reveal what they truly value?
And more importantly, what happens when these elegant, theoretically perfect mathematical models just violently collide with the messy reality of human cognition?
Okay, let's unpack this. Because to figure out where the math fails and, the psychology takes over, the researchers set up a massive showdown.
A heavyweight bout, basically.
Exactly, between two famous, highly complex economic mechanisms that researchers actually use to get people to state their true values. So in one corner, we've got the Becker-DeGroote-Marshak mechanism.
Or the BDM, as it's universally known.
Right, the BDM.
Yeah.
And in the other corner, we have the second price auction, or the STA.
Right.
And we're going to see which of these actually works better in reality, why one totally dominates the other, and why the results of this might completely change how you view incentives in your own daily life.
Yeah, because classical economic theories about human incentives, I mean, they're undeniably beautiful on paper.
Sure.
They map out exactly how a perfectly rational actor, a homo economicus, should behave to maximize their profit.
The theoretical perfect human.
Exactly. But what this paper demonstrates, with just an incredibly robust data set, is that these mathematical ideals are rarely validated in the real world when you add actual human brains into the mix.
Because we have all these cognitive limitations and mental shortcuts.
Right. And to really appreciate the scale of this showdown, we first have to understand the methodology. Like, how do you even test the accuracy of a test?
Yeah, that's the tricky part. Because normally, if I want to know how much you value something, I hand you a coffee mug or a bottle of wine and ask for your bid.
But the problem there is subjectivity.
Right, because I might be a huge coffee mug collector and you might just hate clutter.
So if you bid $5 and I bid 50 cents, neither of us made a mistake. We just have different preferences.
Exactly. So how do you measure an error if there's no objective baseline?
Well, to solve that, Dratchotis and his team used this brilliant experimental design concept called induced value.
Induced value.
Right. So instead of a subjective physical item, they give subjects a digital card. And this card has a known fixed monetary value printed right on it.
Like it literally says $1 or $3.
Exactly. And then they ask the participant to state their offer price to sell that exact card back to the experimenters.
Okay, so it's literally like being handed a $2 bill.
Yeah.
Your true preference, your entirely objective bid, should be exactly $2.
Right. Anything else is just mathematically wrong.
Yeah, like if you say you'll sell a $2 bill for $1, you're actively losing money.
And if you demand $5 for it, you price yourself out of the market entirely, you make no deal, and you miss out on free profit.
It's guaranteed money. And they didn't just test this on like 50 college undergrads in a basement,
But
right?
no, not at all. They ran this across two massive, rigorously controlled experiments with over 3,000 participants.
Wow.
Yeah, it's an extraordinarily robust sample.
So as we walk through these mechanisms, I really want you, the listener, to keep this central question in mind. Why would anyone ever bid anything other than the exact printed value of the card?
It's a baffling paradox.
Right. Why would a rational adult hold a card worth exactly $1 and confidently write down a bid of like $1.50?
Well, let's step into the ring and look at the two frameworks they used.
Yes, contender one, experiment one, the Becker-DeGroote-Marshak mechanism, the BDM. Walk us through it.
Okay, so you're holding your digital card. Let's say its induced value is $2.
Got it.
You are asked to state the precise price at which you're willing to sell it.
Okay.
Once you lock in your offer, a computer algorithm draws a completely random price from a set range, say, anywhere from $0 to $4.
Wait, let me make sure I'm mapping this out right. I state my selling price. Then the computer acts as the buyer and just picks a random number.
Yep, completely random, like rolling dice.
Okay, so how does the transaction actually work?
It's a strict threshold. If the random price the computer draws is higher than your offer,
okay,
you successfully sell the card. But crucially, you get paid that random higher price, not your asking price.
Oh, interesting. And if it's lower?
If the computer's draw is lower than your offer, the deal fails. You just keep your original $2 card.
We really need to pause and work through the logic of this because I can immediately see why this breaks people's brains.
It absolutely does.
Okay, let's say I have a $2 card and I decide to be greedy. I state my selling price as $3.
Right.
But the computer randomly draws $2.50. Because that draw is lower than my greedy $3 asking price, the deal fails.
Correct. You walk away with your basic $2 card.
But wait, if I had just told the truth and been $2, the computer's $2.50 draw would have been higher than my bid.
Exactly. The deal would have gone through.
And I would have been paid the computer's price of $2.50, so I'd make a clear 50-cent profit. My greed actually punished me.
You've just perfectly explained incentive compatibility.
Oh, okay. Is that the formal term?
Yes. In a BDM mechanism, the math guarantees that your dominant strategy, your only logical move, is to state the exact true value of the item.
Because any attempt to game the system just hurts you.
Right. If you overbid or underbid, you just increase your chances of missing a profitable deal or forcing a loss.
But man, the cognitive gymnastics required to realize that on the fly.
It's staggering.
You're asking a regular person to mentally simulate like an infinite series of invisible random probabilities against a computer.
Yeah, behavioral scientists call it contingent reasoning. You have to hold a dozen what-if scenarios in your head all at once.
No wonder people misbid. It feels like a confusing lottery.
And that's the vulnerability of the BDM. It introduces what economists call objective uncertainty.
Because it's a random number generator.
Right. The math dictates honesty is best, but human beings just don't intuitively process probability distributions.
We use heuristics.
Yeah.
Mental shortcuts.
Exactly. And faced with a random lottery, our heuristic is usually to try and outsmart the slot machine.
Which leads directly to terrible, irrational bidding. Okay, so the BDM is a theoretical masterpiece, but a total cognitive nightmare.
Perfectly said.
Which brings us to contender two from experiment two, the second price auction, or the SPA. How is this different?
Well, the SPA fundamentally changes the architecture of the decision. You aren't playing against a computer in isolation anymore.
Okay, who am I playing against?
You're in a competitive market with three other real human beings.
Got it. Group of four.
Yes. All four of you hold a card, and you all privately state your offer to sell it.
Okay.
And because the experimenter is acting as a buyer wanting the best deal, the person who offers the lowest price wins the right to sell.
That makes total sense. Standard procurement auction, lowest bidder wins the contract.
Yes, but here is the twist that makes it a second price auction.
Okay, lay it on me.
The winner doesn't get paid the low price they offered. They get paid the second lowest offer price submitted by the rest of the group.
Wait, what? Okay, we need another concrete example for this one.
Sure. Let's say all four of us have a card worth $2.
Okay.
You bid your true value, $2. The other three people get greedy and bid $3, $4, and $5.
Because my $2 bid is the lowest, I win the auction.
Right. But you don't get your $2, you get paid the second lowest bid.
Which was $3. So by telling the absolute truth, I walk away with $3, I make a dollar in pure profit.
Exactly. Now let's look at the inverse. What if you try to guarantee a win by underbidding?
Like I bid $1 just to make sure I win.
Right, you win. But what if the second lowest bid from the group was $1.50?
Then I'm forced to sell my $2 card for $1.50. Oh, man!
Yeah, you just actively lost 50 cents because you lied about your valuation.
Okay, so once again, the math completely punishes any deviation from the absolute truth.
Always. Bid too high, you lose the deal. Bid too low, you win, but get forced into a loss.
The only safe harbor is the exact induced value of the card.
Exactly. Both BDM and SPA are perfectly incentive compatible. But SPA introduces strategic uncertainty instead of objective uncertainty.
Because it's based on human strategies, not a random computer.
Right. And just to note, they did use bots sometimes if they couldn't find enough humans fast enough, but it didn't change the outcome at all.
Interesting.
It was the psychological framing of competing in a market that mattered.
Okay, so we have a clear theoretical tie here. Both mechanisms mathematically guarantee that telling the truth is the best strategy. So when they unleashed these on 3,000 people, what did the actual data show?
It was entirely unequivocal.
Yeah.
The SPA completely crushed the BDM.
Wow. Let's quantify that. How badly did the BDM fail?
Well, under the BDM, participants deviated massively from the true value of their cards. The average relative deviation was a staggering 51.9%.
51.9?
Yeah. Mostly aggressive overbidding.
Well,
out of all the choices made, only 15.5% exactly matched the true objective value.
That is a colossal failure rate. We're talking about almost 85% of people looking at a card that says $1 and writing down a totally different number because the mechanism just confused them.
Exactly.
So what happened when they switched to the SPA?
The improvement was dramatic. The rate of severe misbidding dropped significantly. Nearly 20% matched perfectly.
That's a solid bump.
But, more importantly, the extreme outliers vanished. About 43% of the bids were tightly clustered within just 10% of the true value.
Wow.
The overall average deviation plummeted from 51.9% down to 17.4%.
So the SPA works way better because it relies on social heuristics we already understand. You intuitively grasped the danger of a human auction.
Exactly. You don't have to calculate invisible algorithms. You just know that bidding less than an item is worth is dumb. And pricing yourself out means you lose.
It leverages natural market intuition.
What's fascinating here is that on paper, both mechanisms should be flawless. But in practice, the cognitive burden of the BDM just overwhelms the working memory.
That perfectly transitions us to the next big question the study tackled, the money.
Yes.
Because we all just naturally assume that if you pay people cold, hard cash, they'll pay closer attention and make better choices than if they're playing with Monopoly money, right?
It's arguably the most deeply entrenched assumption in experimental economics.
Right.
Vernon Smith's induced value theory says financial incentives must be real, or people suffer from hypothetical bias and just click random buttons to go home.
So to test this, the researchers created a whole spectrum of incentive schemes. Walk us through those tiers.
So they systematically manipulated the probability that a choice would result in an actual financial payout.
Okay.
Top tier, 100% guaranteed certainty of real cash. Next tier down, 50% chance.
Okay.
Then a 1% chance.
Wow, stepping it down.
They even had an extreme boundary condition, a tiny 0.2% chance of real money.
So at that point, you aren't really making an economic calculation. You're just holding a low odds lottery ticket.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And finally, the ultimate control group.
Yeah.
Purely hypothetical.
Zero chance of money.
Right. They were explicitly told no real money is on the line. This is just a mental exercise.
So classical economics says the guaranteed cash group should heavily outperform the hypothetical group in accuracy. What did the data actually show?
A completely statistically definitive null result.
Absolutely no difference.
None whatsoever. Zero variance in the rate of misbidding across any of the groups.
That is jaw-dropping.
Whether it was 100% guaranteed cash, a 1% lottery, or totally hypothetical, the magnitude of the deviations remained exactly the same.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me. It's like telling someone they're playing a hand of poker for $1 million versus playing for matchsticks, and they play the exact same hand both times.
That's a great way to look at it. The complex payment mechanisms exerted zero corrective effect on behavior.
Because if you ask someone to do complex algebra and offer them a penny versus $1,000, the money doesn't spontaneously teach them algebra.
Exactly. The cognitive ceiling is already hit. The human brain conserves metabolic energy, so it only uses deep analytical processing system 2 thinking when it sees a clear path to a solution.
And since the BDM matrix or the SPA auction feels cognitively opaque, the brain just defaults to a gut-level heuristic. Throwing cash at it doesn't unlock extra brain power.
Right. The task just isn't cognitively demanding in a way where money helps.
Okay. We have to synthesize this. We know the cash probability did nothing to correct irrational behavior. We know the SPA environment produced fewer mistakes than the BDM.
Yes.
So if it isn't money, what actually drives someone to make an accurate choice versus a terrible one?
This is the true revelation of the paper. We uncover the real architects of human decision-making, choice architecture.
Okay.
While the objective financial incentives failed, the researchers found 2 subtle design choices that massively influence behavior.
Let's examine the first one. What caused people to act more rationally?
It was the magnitude of the induced value itself.
The actual dollar amount on the card.
Yes. In some iterations, the card was worth $1. In others, $3. The data show that when the card had a higher base value, like holding a $3 card instead of a $1 card, bids were significantly more accurate.
That is such a fascinating quirk of psychology. It's like a larger integer simply commands more subconscious respect.
Exactly. A $3 item feels like it requires more deliberate valuation, even if the real-world payout is purely hypothetical. Yeah. We anchor our attention proportionally to the size of the number.
Wild. What was the second architectural trigger?
The range of allowed bids. Economists call it the support. In the BDM, the random number generator had different caps. Sometimes it could only reach $4. Other times it went up to $6.
So they basically widened the visual and mathematical playing field on the screen.
Yes, and the results were striking. When the range was broader, up to $6 instead of $4, the magnitude of misbidding absolutely skyrocketed.
Wow.
Giving participants a larger numerical space essentially granted them a larger canvas to make proportional errors.
Oh man, the immense irony of this conclusion. The strict theoretical rules, the math of incentive compatibility, the guaranteed real-world cash, they do absolutely nothing to alter human irrationality.
Nothing at all.
But the arbitrary aesthetics, the starting integer on the screen, the invisible boundaries of a Slayer widget, that changes literally everything about how the participant behaves.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that paradox is the definitive message of this 2026 paper. Theoretically relevant variables don't produce empirical differences.
Right.
But design choices that shouldn't matter at all to irrational actor-like visual ranges or formatting it as a social auction rather than a computer lottery, those produce massive measurable differences.
And this is exactly why this deep dive matters to you, the listener, because the choice architecture of the modern world dictates your behavior far more heavily than the actual financial stakes.
Absolutely.
Just think about how a software subscription is presented to you on a pricing page, or how an airline displays ticket upgrades.
Or a car dealership negotiating a price.
Exactly. The physical boundaries of the options, the social framing, the highest number visible on the screen, those elements are subtly guiding your hand. You are rarely reacting to the objective monetary value. You're reacting to the psychological frame.
It is a profoundly humbling realization about our own autonomy.
Yeah.
Our environment actively shapes the limits of our rationality.
It really is. So just to briefly wrap up the journey we've taken today, we set out to investigate how economists test our true valuations.
Yep.
We saw the second price auction absolutely defeat the computationally exhausting BDM mechanism.
Because it lifted that cognitive burden.
We analyzed the perplexing reality that real cash did not make people one fraction of a percent more accurate than those playing for purely hypothetical snakes.
No result across the board.
And ultimately, we learn that human beings are influenced more by the boundaries of a question than the cash prize attached to it.
Which leaves us with a fascinating final thought for you to mull over long after this discussion ends.
Let's hear it.
If purely hypothetical choices perfectly mirror real stakes choices in these highly controlled economic settings, are the mistakes you make in your own real-world financial decisions actually about the money?
Oh, wow.
Or are you, more often than not, simply a victim of how the options were framed on the screen in front of you?
That is exactly the kind of question you should be asking yourself the next time you're clicking buy now, selecting health insurance, or, you know, negotiating a salary. The next time someone hands you a crisp $10 bill and asks what you'll sell it for, look past the ink and the paper and examine the hidden game they're actually asking you to play. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.